This is a message from Acast.
The UK's first sports podcast festival is coming to London from 8th to 12th February, and you're invited. Whether you're a Formula One fan, a cycling nut, or massive on MMA, PodLive has got you covered. Head over to pod-live.com to check out the lineup and secure your seats.
You. Yeah, you. It's time to mull a lighten up those dark, gloomy nights and grab winter by the spoon. Say goodbye, glum, and hello, yum. With delicious cherry, toffee flavour, and even flipping banana and custard flavour. Mm. Mull a light. Find your flavour today.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On this episode, we dive headfirst into sharing our opinions about the commentators named for the US national team games as well as MLS. Plus, we discuss the future of beIN Sports, sharing insights about Fox making moves, the latest insider news on USL rights, and much, much more. Plus, we have letters from you in the listener mailbag segment. My name is Christopher Harris. I am joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, this is the first episode we've done in almost a month. You and I both took a break for the holidays. I know you and I have been watching separately, but we've been watching tons of soccer. But we also wanted to hold off on doing the pod because we knew that big news was coming. We'll get into that in a minute. But from this past month, I mean, there's been so much that's been going on in terms of the world of soccer, both on the pitch and off the pitch. If there had to be one major talking point from this past month that stands out in your mind, not related to TV or streaming, we'll get into that in a minute, but what do you think it would be from this past month?
I think it's probably, and maybe this is my kind of bias as to what I watch, it's the kind of cycle Chelsea is going through with the new ownership and Graham Potter and all of the issues around playing squad. They continue to buy guys. João Félix has just come in, although he's on loan, but a guy that seems like a repetitive player to a lot of the guys they have, although maybe still a slight upgrade. And this ownership group figuring it out or not figuring it out, if you want to look at it that way, in addition to Potter, who I rate, and obviously you like from his time at Swansea, rate very highly as a manager, not being given maybe the tools or the time to do what he did at Swansea and what he did, especially at Brighton. Brighton, he had a great director of football in Dan Ashworth, who set things up for him to go and mold the squad his way. And just doesn't have that infrastructure at Chelsea. So I think Chelsea, to me, is the big story. And things are really kind of churning up in terms of conversation about that club.
The crazy thing about this, though, Kartik, is that blame it on Russia, right? If Russia hadn't have invaded Ukraine, Roman would probably, I'm sure, still be running Chelsea. He probably would have sacked Tuchel probably earlier than what Todd Bowley did. You'd have another probably top-level manager coming in. And I would imagine that Roman probably would have worked within the club to actually pick out better players than the ones that they signed. Bowley just seems, you know, out of his depth in terms of that, and it's kind of passed that torch on to someone else now. But I blame Russia for this, Kartik. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I completely agree. I think that this situation is a reflection of, now they had a kind of a bloated squad already, and there were some maybe questionable buys in there. But I think the absolute shambles of the summer transfer window, where they overpaid for Fofana, a player who's consistently hurt. Look, I mean, if I were Chelsea, I wouldn't buy any more players from Leicester. Conte, okay, great. And we knew he was great. But Drinkwater, absolute non-entity. Chilwell, as good as he is always injured, and Fofana, as good as he is always injured. So Leicester has made well over £100 million in selling guys to Chelsea who were essentially crocked, right, half the time. So that, and then their pursuit of Anthony Gordon, and now I think that if you include João Félix in it, I think you already have, what, four new players that have come in three or four in the December or the January window, and this is is all a net result of Roman being forced to sell the club, Abramovich, because of Russia invading Ukraine. So, yeah, blame it on Russia. Correct.
Yeah, I think they overpaid for Sterling. I think they overpaid for Cucurella. I think they overpaid for,
Oh, gosh, Cucurella, yeah. I mean, and here's a guy that now I was having a conversation with someone the other day who covers the game in England, and they're thinking, hey, you know, maybe Manchester City feigns interest in some of these guys. Maybe they feigned interest in Alexis Sanchez to get United to bite a couple years ago. Maybe they feigned interest in Cucurella to get Chelsea to bite. And and there, I think some other cases of this as well. It just seems to be a thing where, Harry Maguire is another one, right? Maybe City says they're interested in these guys. They get linked with these guys. And then someone else who's a rival of theirs ultimately overpays for the player, has trouble integrating the player, and then City just keeps going with the squad that they have. And the case of not getting Cucurella, they went out and bought Akanji and Gomez, both coming in from German clubs for less money than combined than they paid for Cucurella.
Yeah, and then you had...
No, they would have paid for Cucurella, I should say.
And then you had Aubameyang, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, which to me was just an awful buy. There's a reason that Arsenal sold him, got rid of him, and then he comes back to the club.
That's the right approach. Okay, so what did Arteta do last January? He trimmed the squad. He didn't sign anyone new. He got rid of problem children like Aubameyang. He got rid of players who maybe didn't fit the rest of the squad. And where are Arsenal right now? They're top of the table. Where are Chelsea? They're, as we record, they're sitting 10th. They're sitting 3rd in West London, by the way, as we record this, behind Brentford, behind Fulham, who they play Thursday.
Wow. Yep. Yeah, and I know Chelsea fans don't like to hear this. I mean, we got criticized a lot during the summertime when we were starting to criticize how Chelsea were. I mean, Todd Boehly's moves at that point in time. 6 months later, you could have any manager in place. I think in charge of Chelsea right now, and I don't think he'd be able to actually achieve more than what Graham Potter's achieving. Maybe a little bit here and there, but not much of a difference. So. The issue is not the manager. The issue really is the mismanagement at the higher level and a lot of kind of poor transfer signings. Hopefully things will turn around for Chelsea, of course, but not looking good right now.
And we're having this conversation, last thing, in the week where Chelsea, the guy who may have been more responsible than any for Chelsea becoming the power they became in Luca Vialli, passes away. So there's a certain irony to that, and passed away in a hospital not far from Stamford Bridge. The contrast is pretty rich, you know, when you think about it. I mean, Vialli was the guy who built Chelsea in many ways and had the vision, both as a player and as a manager. And now you've got Chelsea kind of in shambles at the end of his life.
I think in a way, though, too, it's also... It does not look good for American owners when someone comes in, makes a lot of changes, sacks a coach, signs a bunch of players, and is in the position that they're in now, which is a complete mess. So, we'll do a whole other podcast on that probably in terms of American ownership, but it does not look good in terms of what Todd Boehly's done. All right, Kartik, let's move on because there's been a big week of news. It's been a game of musical chairs at US Soccer and Major League Soccer as both organizations start 2023 with new TV and streaming deals in place. That means it's time for a lot of soccer on-air talent to be moving seats. At the same time, I'm hearing from my sources that Fox Sports are hiring talent for their soccer coverage. Of course, they have now they have UEFA rights to European Championships, UEFA Nations League, and a ton of other properties. And it looks like they need more talent to fill some of those slots. So what's happening right now is that because there's only a short supply of commentators available, you've got US Soccer, MLS, and Fox Sports trying to pick and choose from the different commentators and talent that's available. And some of them actually originally it looked like they were going to go to Major League Soccer, but then Fox picked them up, which means that MLS then has to go back to their list and try and figure out who to pick. So that's one of the things from this past couple of weeks, is that I've been kind of itching, ready to write a story about what I know. However, things are so much in flux. There's so many changes that I think even The Athletic had a story a few days ago about who they thought were some of the front runners for some of these positions within MLS to call the games on Apple's MLS season pass. But things are changing so quickly and so rapidly that the information probably is out of date within a couple of days. So now that the music has stopped in this game of musical chairs, here's what we know so far. When it comes to U.S. men's national team and U.S. women's national team games, those games will be on HBO Max and TNT in the future. Some games will be HBO Max only. Some games will be TNT only. But to find out the actual full schedules of those, you can go to worldsoccertalk.com. And we've got all the schedules there. But in terms of talent, here's what we know so far. So Julie Foudy, Kyle Martino, Shannon Box, DeMarcus Beasley are moving to Warner Brothers Discovery Sports to call these games for the U.S. women and U.S. Men's games. Luke Weilman will be the lead commentator. Sarah Walsh will be the host. And then what they'll do is that that team will basically have the coverage for HBO Max and TNT throughout 2023. It's likely that Foudy and Box will concentrate on the women's games, while Martino and Beasley will focus on the men's games. And then Luke Weilman will be the commentator for both men's and women's games. And then you've also got Sarah Walsh, who's the host. Kartik, what's your initial verdict? Well, not verdict, but what's your feeling so far in terms of the names that they've been announced by TNT and HBO Max?
Yeah, well, okay, so we can start with the TNT, HBO Max, right, before we get to MLS. And yeah, that's a solid team. I like, we sat in front of DeMarcus Beasley when he was still an active player, and ESPN brought him in, remember, for the World Cup draw in Bristol. You and I were there for that, and he already kind of had the analytical skills to talk about the game. And I actually spent some time around him when he trained for a month with the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. This is how, what an animal Beasley was as a player. Is he's out. It's summer break in Europe. He comes. He lives in Miami. He comes and trains with the Strikers, with Fort Lauderdale, who were the closest professional team at the time to where he was living, because he needed to stay in shape. He needed to be ready to go for both the national team and for his club team. He didn't take a month off and siesta. So committed professional. I like him. I love Kyle Martino coming back. We've missed him the last few years on NBC's Premier League coverage. Julie Foudy, obviously old pro at this, very, very good. And Shannon Box, I think, will be quite good as well. Sarah Walsh, a good host. Luke, I'm very happy with his appointment. I think that's a good commentator. In fact, that's a guy, if I was MLS, we're going to get to that in a minute, but I would have been trying to get for that Apple TV package. Now, maybe he's still in the mix for that because they haven't named many commentators, actually, in their roster that they unveiled. But, yeah, I really like the setup for Warner Discovery and what they're going to do with HBO Max and TNT. Now the question comes to the actual production of the matches, and that's something we won't be able to talk about until after next week's match, WNT versus New Zealand, and give a report card on that.
Yeah, yeah, that could be a whole other story, because it is Turner Sports who were acquired, well, now part of the Warner Brothers Discovery family. And in the future, it looks like HBO Max may become Max instead of HBO Max. But yeah, lots of question marks about the production, but hopefully they'll get that part right from lessons learned in the past. And of course, they do a great job of covering other sports. My take on this, Kartik, is yes, I'm really happy about Kyle Martino coming back. It's been a long time. We've missed him. Whether he's going to be able to hit the ground running because he's been gone for so long, I'm not sure, but I have confidence in his analytical skills. Shannon Box, I'm not sure. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. Definitely a good resume in terms of, you know, playing for the U.S. women's national team and winning Olympics and playing World Cups, etc. However, overall, Kartik, my feeling is that the talent picked so far don't match the hype of U.S. women's national team and U.S. men's national team. Julie Foudy is a pro. I mean, definitely one of the best, if not the best, covering the women's game. But what it feels like to me, especially with the appointment of Luke Wildman, is that it's almost like it's Warner Brothers Discovery cost-cutting, not going out there for the most expensive talent available, but looking to be more economical and trying to find some good people, definitely good talent, but without having to spend a lot of money. However, at the same time, the reality of this deal is that there's not a lot of games that are going to be really super exciting, right? It's going to be some friendlies. You're going to have, CONCACAF Nations League, I think, some of those games. She Believes Cup. And that's about it because, I mean, the U.S. men don't need to qualify for the 2026 World Cup, so you're not going to get those type of games. So the level of games themselves are going to be kind of at a plateau for the most part, which I guess then does, you mean, kind of lead into the talent. You don't want to spend a ton of money hiring all these, you mean, these million-dollar people and having games that aren't going to be super, super... They're not going to generate massive amounts of viewership, basically. So that's my take on it. I mean, Luke Wildman, I know, has covered MLS for TSN, is originally from England, worked with the BBC... And within MLS circles, I'm hearing good things about him, but I don't remember hearing him calling any games because he's calling mostly games in Canada. So it'll be interesting to see how he does it, especially. All right, so that is on the U.S. men's national team and U.S. women's national team side of things. Now, meanwhile, at MLS, they have announced that they're hiring 14 English language broadcasters, 14 Spanish language broadcasters, and then 3 French language broadcasters for a total of 31 people. So this week they unveiled 15 people so far, plus 3 studio hosts. So presumably there's 16 more people that they will announce. And as we mentioned before, too, kind of in the lead up to this podcast, is there is competition, right? So Fox is hiring. They're trying to get some more talent to beef up their talent pile. Then you've got U.S. Soccer that's, well, basically Warner Brothers Discovery that have hired their folks. And now you have MLS looking and trying to get everyone hired in pretty short order. And I think they're behind the eight ball, definitely. A lot of these picks, at this point in time, you would imagine that they would have had the entire cast, everyone picked. But there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes. It's been a little bit messy. It's been definitely fast-tracked. And they still don't have everyone named yet. But of the people that we do know, of the 15 people that they did announce this week, 3 of them are commentators. So there's definitely a lot more commentators that they need to hire. The 3 that they've named and hired are Steve Cangelosi, Max Bredos, and Jake Zivin. And then the co-commentators so far are Kendra De Sinobin, Mo Adu, Laurie Lindsay, Daniel Slayton, Taylor Twelman, Marcelo Balboa, Sebastian Latou, Sasha Clyston, and Diego Valeri. Kartik, so of the people that I've named so far, of the commentators and the co-commentators, are you filled with a sense of enthusiasm?
Well, no. I mean, I think that there's some solid picks. And also Frederick Lord, on the French language side is someone I've worked with in the past, and I'm glad he's getting the shot with Apple and with MLS. But yeah, I guess Cangelosi and Bredos in particular are really high-level commentators of soccer in this country, and I was kind of concerned that Cangelosi may not get hired, so I'm sort of relieved that he's on that roster. In terms of the co-commentators, right? We like Taylor Twellman. I think Latou and Valeri add a perspective, and particularly kind of also a Cascadia perspective that is welcome. The rest are all, you know, solid. They're people we're used to hearing, but there's nothing edgy, right? I think this is a general problem with MLS broadcasts. There's nothing overly compelling or controversial that draws you into to watch Major League Soccer, or edgy in presentation. And I think
there's no Roy Keane.
No, right. Yeah. That, for lack of a better example, right. There's no Roy Keane. There's nobody who's going to get you into really wanting to watch what they have to say. Nothing edgy, nothing overly interesting that'll make you want to listen to the commentators. And we've had this complaint about NBC's Premier League coverage, too. I think that's getting better. I think we've been seeing what I've noticed, just as a quick aside, Chris, and we'll get back to this, is when they show matches on Peacock, which were a lot of matches over this holiday period, this festive period, there seems to be a little more edginess and drawn out good analysis from the Robbies and from Danny and Tim Howard than you get on the linear side. So maybe that will be the same case with Apple. Now that all of these commentators are on the streaming side, maybe it's a little easier for them. I don't know.
Yeah, on the Peacock thing, I noticed that too. And I think part of it, the reason why you're noticing a little bit more of kind of back and forth, maybe a little bit more friction, more a little bit more debate over the holiday period on Peacock for Premier League games is because they have more time. It's not like where it's going on the USA Network, where it's a kind of a brief synopsis of just what happened, a halftime, go to a commercial, come back from commercial, and then just have some type of promo and then go back to commercial. On Peacock, they actually have the time to debate and talk about it, which shows, I mean, definitely with Apple TV and the MLS Season Pass, is the capability, the opportunity is there to have more of those discussions, to go a little bit deeper dive, to do some things where you're not having to worry about commercial TV breaks. Now, how well they'll do with that time that they have, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, Taylor Twellman to me is definitely the one name that Taylor's going to have a lot of opportunities to do different things. And that I'm excited about. And the rest of the names, none of them are bad, right? These are all people. I mean, Laurie Lindsay, I think it was at Nashville. I mean, a lot of these, Daniel Slayton, you go down the list. These are all professionals. These are all good people. These are all people that do good work. But like you too, Kartik, other than Taylor, maybe Marcelo Balboa, but I'm not like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they hired XYZ. I'm going to tune in just to watch or just to hear his or her commentary or his or her analysis. I'm not getting that yet. So other than Taylor, I mean, Taylor's the only one that's really kind of a standout star in this package that's been announced thus far. And I really hope that MLS goes, the reason that they haven't named some of these other people, which is a long list of people that they haven't named, hopefully these are much bigger stars. These are people that do bring in an audience just by the name themselves.
And a co-commentator can make you want to watch a match. So, for example, the other day, Villarreal is playing Real Madrid, and I'm expecting Steve McManaman to be the co-commentator because he usually is for big La Liga matches on ESPN. And it was Stuart Robson, who, by the way, then called a FA Cup match later that day, which was kind of I think he did one with John Champion, and this match was with Derek Ray. La Liga match was with Derek Ray. The FA Cup match was with John Champion. But I'm thinking, okay, Stu Robson, this is good. And then first few minutes, he's making observations that make me think, okay, I'm going to keep watching this match, even though I'm watching Wrexham on another device against Coventry in the FA Cup. It was at the same time, actually, now that I remember. So I stayed engaged in that La Liga match, which I really didn't intend to watch. I was just checking on the match because you had Derek Ray and Stu Robson calling the match, and I was entertained and actually compelled by what they had to say, how they were viewing the match. So it can work. Maybe I'm a rarity, but I think you want commentators that keep you engaged.
Yeah, we can go down the list and, I mean, name names as far as people that make us want to stay with a game or tune in to watch a game. So to me personally, whether it's Derek Ray, Peter Drury, Jim Beglin, Even Gary Birtles. Gary Birtles is one of my favorites. But those are the type of people that if I know that those people are calling games, I will make an effort to actually watch those games, even if I'm not as interested in watching that particular match. And from this list, other than Taylor, I don't see that draw yet. And Moadu's on there, which, I mean, Mo's good. However, I still think there's improvement necessary there to be the best that he can be. And I think in many ways, I think he's better in the studio than doing a co-commentary. But maybe there's an opportunity for him to improve in both areas. I think what I'm looking for is also somebody to be critical, right? Critical, whether it's positive or negative, but basically to call things out, or to, be a little bit edgy, like you said, Kartik, too. So that's definitely an excellent point there. What's interesting, Kartik, and I think this news has really kind of slipped under the radar, and I'm not sure if you saw it either. I only saw it this morning, but The Athletic is reporting that the league has turned to production of these games. They've turned it over to IMG, which is a sports media giant out of the UK. Both you and I know them very, very well in terms of really crisp production, high quality stuff. I think you've worked with them in different ways too, Kartik. But to me, this says two things. One is MLS tried to figure out the production themselves and were completely maybe went in with high aspirations, but ended up finding out that this is a major, major deal to actually pull this off, and weren't able to do it to the level that we want to see on Apple. However, them handing over the production of these games to IMG is a smart move. Hopefully, I mean, time-wise, it's not a lot of time, but hopefully IMG can do a really good job, because I have a lot of confidence in them. What about you, Kartik?
Yeah, I have a lot of confidence in IMG and their productions. You see Serie A, the EFL, et cetera, FA Cup just this past weekend. I think that this, though, is an admission. And we had talked about this for I don't know how long on this podcast, Chris. Another thing you and I were right about. This is not an easy endeavor to bring production in-house and to keep a standard of quality and maintain a look throughout the league, and they have more teams now than ever, right? So it becomes that much more difficult. And you've got a situation now that because they're going to Apple, which is high, high quality. And the thing about Apple TV Plus that's a little bit different than other streaming services is I think a few years ago, Apple realized they were never going to get the volume of streaming content that the studio-connected streaming services like Paramount Plus and Peacock could get, or network and studio-connected things, or Netflix or Amazon Prime because of their various connections and their models. So they focused on the quality of production as a differentiator. And everything that Apple TV Plus produces is 4K. Everything is really crisp production-wise. Well, that sets a high bar for MLS, because that hasn't always been the case with MLS productions at the local level with their individual clubs. So it was always going to be a very difficult, cumbersome, and expensive endeavor. So now they're outsourcing it. Who knows? We didn't see it in the Athletic report. Who knows how much this is costing MLS, but I'm sure it's not inexpensive. I'm sure it's another expense maybe they weren't counting on.
Speaking of expenses, what are your thoughts on the pricing of Apple TV's MLS season pass? So it's $99 a season, or it's $15 a month. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I'm a kind of a strange rarity because I pay for like 10 newspapers and I have all the streaming services. Every single one of them I've subscribed to, other than like AMC Plus and more obscure ones. I just launched a Substack newsletter and I've been shocked by the number of people who've paid to subscribe to it already. I think maybe people are willing to pay for content, but it has to be compelling content again. And is MLS, does MLS fit that threshold? People pay for streaming services because it's effectively like a bundle. You get, if you pay for Paramount Plus, for instance, you get however many different soccer properties, including the Champions League, including CONCACAF stuff, including Serie A, and then you get movies, all the Paramount Studio movies. You can Top Gun Maverick now, you get on Paramount Plus, for instance. Big hit from last year in terms of Hollywood movies. You get documentaries, you get Smithsonian stuff, and all of that is less expensive a month than the MLS season pass. So I think people are up to paying for content, but are they willing to pay that much for standalone content, which may or may not be very compelling for them? How many MLS fans are not already season ticket holders for their local clubs who are going to pay that? That we don't know. I assume MLS has done market research and Apple has done market research and they've hit a sweet spot in terms of price, but maybe not. Maybe this thing is going to blow up in their face. And it effectively, maybe is something we talk about in another show, it effectively opens the door for both NWSL and USL to become more prominent in the domestic American sports landscape in terms of not only linear television. MLS is staying on linear for some games, but in terms of streaming, because they'll be part of larger bundles and larger properties.
Yeah, good points. I mean, the pricing, yeah, definitely. I mean, if you want to watch every single game of the Bundesliga, you get ESPN Plus for $10. But then with that, you get La Liga every game. You get, a ton of other sports too, as well as soccer, FA Cup, League Cup. You go down that list and you look at the number of live sports events you get a month with ESPN Plus for $10. It's over 2,000 live sports events a month. And they look at MLS season pass, $15 a month, and that's it. You get all the MLS games, but nothing else. You get other content as far as some features or some interviews or behind the scenes footage, all MLS related. So yeah, it is a big question. It's a big step. It's a giant leap, really, for Major League Soccer.
Here's the other thing. I think the add-on thing is a problem because, again, I said people will subscribe, including me, for Paramount Plus and Disney Plus, etc. People are subscribing, surprisingly, for me to I'm pleased about it, but surprisingly for me to my Substack newsletter. But that's a basic subscription. Apple TV Plus now, it's an add-on. And what we found when the Premier League the Premier League didn't voluntarily do this, but when NBC moved some of the matches to NBC Sports Gold, remember? That was an add-on that people didn't want to pay for. And then when Peacock Premium, remember the difference between Peacock and Peacock Premium and Peacock Premium Plus, right? It's Peacock Premium Plus. People were complaining to us on this podcast and on the World Soccer Talk website. I already have Peacock Premium. Why do I have to pay the extra for Peacock Premium Plus to watch whatever Premier League match and to get the 24/7 Premier League channel? So now it's 3 years into the Peacock thing, and Peacock's price point is quite generous compared to this MLS thing. So there's less complaints, but there is always a natural tendency to, okay, I'll subscribe to something, but then when you have to add another layer on, there's an additional paywall behind already a paywall, people freak out.
Yeah, and Apple TV Plus, I think, is about $7 a month. And then if you want to get also MLS Season Pass, which is separate, you can add that on for $13 a month. Or if you just wanted to get MLS Season Pass by itself for every game, it's $15 a month. So, yeah, it is a giant leap, but it's also a big question. The big question is, MLS has always touted that they've got a young internet savvy audience that definitely is a lot younger than other American sports, but will they be willing to pay the $15 a month to get this content? The other part of this too, which I'll be curious about.
It's time to Muller lighten up those dark, gloomy nights and grab winter by the spoon. Say goodbye, glum, and hello, yum. With delicious cherry, toffee flavour, and even flipping banana and custard flavour. Muller Light, find your flavour today.
This is a message from Acast.
The UK's first sports podcast festival is coming to London from 8th to 12th February, and you're invited. Whether you're a Formula One fan, a cycling nut, or massive on MMA, PodLive has got you covered. Head over to pod-live.com to check out the lineup and secure your seat.
Is illegal streaming. So you mean you look at any league around the world or any cup competition around the world, the amount of illegal streaming that's happening based on those games and the availability of that is still off the charts, right? It's available. I mean, if you wanted to go down that rabbit hole, it's there. But with Apple controlling the ecosystem, other than the games that are going to be also on television, but Apple controlling the vast majority of the ecosystem, is how easily will it be to find those games illegally? Or does Apple have a way of actually cracking down on this more so than any other company has done in the past to really control that? So from a tech point of view, I'm interested to see what happens there. All right, Kartik, one more question about this deal, because we've talked about US soccer, we've talked about Major League Soccer, but I have a what-if question for you. And that is, what if former USSF President Carlos Cordero had never pushed to break up the US soccer and Major League Soccer TV deal? And what if MLS and US soccer had both gone to market again in a combined TV streaming package with games from MLS, US Women's National Team, and USMNT would be available to acquire in one package, as it has been in the past? You mean basically forever with MLS and US soccer as part of that Soccer United marketing deal. This is the first time, this is why they're both going off on their separate ways. But what if that had never happened? What if they were still combined? Do you think we'd see anything different to what we see today?
Yeah, I think you might very well see Fox as the linear partner and Warner Discovery with the inventory of MLS games in addition to US games to put on HBO Max, or when it combines with Discovery Plus into what is reportedly going to be called Max, that new streaming service. I think you might see some of the same partners, but in a different configuration. You would not see this Apple component. I think that was very much MLS being left on its own without the US piece of this. And without the US piece of this, broadcast Casters were less interested. I know you and I have both done some reporting. We talked to sources in the business, the big networks, the ones you would think of normally, the ones that have acquired other soccer properties were less interested in at Major League Soccer without the USMNT and USWNT component. And ultimately, Carlos Cordero, who was forced out as president of USSF, he knew this, right? He had been, even when he was running for president, I wasn't a huge fan of his presidential campaign because I thought he was kind of status quo-y, but there were areas where he was pushing back, and this was one. He thought the U.S. Soccer Federation wasn't maximizing its full marketing and media rights capability by bundling with MLS, and ultimately he was right about that. I think whether fans have a hard time with the HBO Max deal, TNT deal or not, I think it's a better deal for U.S. soccer than going in with MLS was in the past. So they're able to branch out and do their own thing now, which I think is very important for the Federation in creating an identity that is separate from the first division in the men's game in this country. I think everybody knows my thoughts on that, so I'll just leave it at that, on that joint identity and that kind of bundling. But I do think Cordero, if he hadn't pushed for it, this would look very different. I would say probably some of the same partners, Fox and TNT or HBO Max, but in a different configuration where the two were still together.
The big difference for me is Univision. I think you'd have Univision in on this deal, right? TV
for sure.
Rights, streaming rights, and being a partner, which is a huge... So that's the other thing for Apple TV, MLS Season Pass, is for the regular season and playoffs, games will be on there in Spanish. So you're not going to have a Telemundo or a Univision promoting those games. So what happens to the Spanish language audience? Do they gravitate to Apple's MLS Season Pass or not?
I'm not sure they do, and let's not forget, and I neglected to mention this, U.S. Soccer still has Univision as a partner on the Spanish language side, so they're still working with Univision on national team stuff. Univision is now out of MLS, which I think is terribly risky. I mean, outside of the League's Cup, that's a separate thing we can talk about, but MLS regular season and playoffs is off of Spanish language linear television, which streaming is... I know, and I've talked to some people in the industry. They say that a big push in the media business is to get younger millennial and Gen Z Hispanics, Latinos in the U.S., to stream as much as non-Hispanics do, right, in the U.S. They lag a little behind in streaming numbers and streaming subscriptions. So maybe Apple and MLS help make that happen. But on the surface, it's a bigger risk to not be on linear television on the Spanish language side than on the English language side, and it could really hurt MLS.
Of course, they've got League's Cup, which is great, which is like that kind of summer tournament. That will do well, but some of those games are going to be on Univision, so I think that audience will gravitate to watching those games on television. And I mean, the hope is that Major League Soccer hopes that that audience will also gravitate, and they'll sign up for MLS Season Pass. The other thing about this too, Kartik, is that I think the case study of ESPN Plus acquiring the rights to La Liga, making every single game available in English and Spanish on ESPN Plus, has worked well on the English language side, so to speak. On the Spanish language side, I think the proof is in the pudding on that one, in that now many of those games are on ESPN Deportes and ESPN Plus in Spanish language. So that, to me, tells me that that La Liga and ESPN were hoping that that would pull in the Spanish language audience to subscribe to ESPN Plus in large numbers, and I don't think that's happening. So that's why they're starting to show some of those games on ESPN Deportes. All right, Kartik, let's move on. And you mentioned a little bit too about this, but in terms of TV streaming news, and lots of question marks about USL. They've announced their schedule for the first part of the season. But what are you hearing on the TV side?
Yeah, so there was a little bit of a freak out when USL announced their schedule without an ESPN or ESPN Plus component, as you've had the last several seasons, I think now 4 or 5 seasons with USL. My understanding is, and it's not done yet, so I want to preface that. My understanding from talking to multiple team sources within USL is that they're likely to get an ESPN Plus deal with some ESPN broadcast windows like they've had previous years, and maybe more favorable windows with MLS off ESPN. That's likely to get done for this season in the near future. But in the meantime, also, USL is talking about longer-term deals, which may include some of their new women's leagues that they've launched, the W League and the USL Super League, which will launch in a few seasons, on another broadcaster, whether it's the Disney family with ESPN Plus, Hulu, etc., or whether it's somewhere else, Paramount Plus, Peacock, wherever. Now, a key for USL, and I want to stress this because we've just gone through this whole conversation about MLS and Apple. A key for USL is to keep their product on some sort of mainstream streaming platform, not necessarily on linear television, but on a mainstream streaming platform. So you can just offhand think of what those are: Amazon Prime, Paramount Plus, Peacock, Disney Plus, not Disney Plus, sorry, ESPN Plus, which is part of Disney, and maybe, and HBO Max, right? So it would be somewhere in that circle. I don't think Apple would be a consideration. Actually, I don't think Amazon would be a consideration also, so drop that. I think we're talking about network-connected streaming services for USL. At least that's my read on it right now.
Yeah, and if USL did sign another contract to extend the contract with ESPN, I mean, you could argue that USL would be more accessible than MLS. I mean, competition is good, right? Both on the streaming side and on the soccer side. And with MLS being really kind of in a closed environment, behind a paywall, and yes, ESPN Plus is a paywall too, but it's $10 a month. Many of our listeners probably already subscribe to it for Bundesliga, La Liga, FA Cup, League Cup, etc. If USL is on there, it makes and if the quality is decent, you know what I mean, it may cause some competition there with MLS. It may hold back those MLS numbers a little bit.
Yeah, just real quickly, Chris, great point there. That is part of the thinking from my reporting, from my conversations, is that because MLS has gone in this direction, it's key for USL. Okay, you're behind a paywall, but as we said, people generally already who are soccer fans subscribe to those services because there's soccer already on there. So they would just be, let's just hypothetically say they go to CBS and Paramount. They would just be another soccer property in addition to CONCACAF and Champions League and Serie A and Scottish League and all of the stuff, Brazil, Argentina, all the leagues we see on Paramount Plus. Whereas, again, with MLS going to Apple, it's the first soccer property. You have to pay an additional fee, whether you're an Apple TV Plus subscriber now or not. So it's a potential opportunity for them. And I haven't had any conversations in NWSL, but Chris, I have to think NWSL, which is on Paramount Plus currently, they're another thing on Paramount Plus, sorry, forgot to mention them, has to think that this is a great opportunity for them between their CBS broadcast deal and Paramount Plus for streaming. They're going to be as visible, if not more visible, than MLS in the next couple of years if they stay in the same place. And let's face it, we've talked about this. The ratings for NWSL matches that have been on CBS, over the air, have been not that different than MLS matches on Fox or ABC. So I think there's opportunity for other U.S. leagues, is the point, with MLS going to Apple.
All right, moving on to one more piece of news before we get to the mailbag, and that is that BN Sports are back. I mean, they haven't gone away, but a lot of us were thinking, myself included, a lot of us were thinking that after the end of the 2022 World Cup, that really BN Sports, other than a few different leagues that they had, wouldn't be that interested in continuing. But I think in many ways, I mean, BN Sports is a global media group. And I mean, in order to be really respected, I think you have to be on U.S. television, and they're there. I mean, they still have the rights to different leagues. But the big news that really kind of sends a shockwave through the system is that they have renewed the rights to Copa Libertadores, Copa Sudamericana, and the Recopa through 2026. So you've got, 3 more years of South American soccer there on BN Sports. And they show games in English, Spanish, Portuguese, on TV, on streaming. In many ways, it's a good fit, because if you want to watch Copa Libertadores or Copa Sudamericana, you can guarantee you can watch all those games on BN Sports. But they keep on going, Kartik. BN Sports comes back alive. And of course, they have Ligue 1 rights, and that's through the end of the 23-24 season. So we can expect probably in the next 6 months some conversations and negotiations and perhaps bidding to start on Ligue 1 rights. But do you think that Ligue 1 might move away, or what's your thoughts on that?
I hope so, but it's part of a greater global strategy. And even watching the Netflix documentary on FIFA, it reminded me of just the extensive ties between Qatar and Qatar and France, just in general as nation states. So that's part of the consideration
and
here.
PSG.
And PSG, right, in addition to that. So maybe not. I mean, I will admit I was wrong. I was one of those people who was loudly proclaiming, because of stuff that I was hearing from the inside, quite frankly, that that BN would be folded. I thought it would be folded after the World Cup. Probably it would go through the end of the 2022-23 European club seasons and fold the U.S. channel, and Liga would go up for bid or be sublicensed to someone else next season. And clearly, that's not happening. So I was wrong about that.
Yeah, the French League, though, too. I mean, if the French, I know the French League has higher aspirations. They want to be kind of on a similar level to Serie A or the Bundesliga. And they talk about the Premier League, too. But I mean, it's really no comparison in terms of popularity in the US. However, if Ligue 1 did a new deal for 24 onwards with, say, I don't know, say it's Paramount Plus. I mean, for BeIN Sports, that's a huge loss, because the only major daytime programming that they would have from a soccer perspective would be the Turkish Super League. And while that's interesting to watch now and again, I mean, it's a small audience, isn't the highest quality, is not the best league by any means. So in many ways, I mean, yes, BeIN Sports keeping Copa Libertadores and Copa Sudamericana is important for the nighttime, the nighttime programming in terms of what they have when that competition's running. They really need Liga in order to have daytime programming. So so that's another issue too. So I think BeIN Sports will definitely try to renew those rights, and Liga has to make the decision, has to try and think this through and comes to the reality of where they are in the system. And it really is, they're in a tough place because they're up against so much competition, just like MLS is up against so much competition against, you mean, NWSL and USL, etc. So, yeah, interesting times coming up. All right, listener mailbag. Let's start off with Brian Sanders. And he wants to talk about CBS and the Champions League. Brian Sanders says, "It might be a silly idea, but as I have a four-month-old son, I know that eventually my son will interact with TV in some form of his own. So I had this thought. The NFL has been doing a playoff game in the wild card round on CBS's children's channel, Nickelodeon, as CBS has the rights. Why not consider having the Champions League final also a Nickelodeon? Anyone watching the channel at that time is not someone who might be watching any soccer for years unless it's introduced to them. It would bring the sport to an entirely different audience than UEFA reaches on CBS, CBS Sports Network, or Paramount Plus. Just thinking of the odds that a 3-plus year old would see the final, be interested by it, and get their parents to buy them, say, a PSG shirt with Mbappe on it. New year, new ideas. Hope everyone's new year is a banner year." Yes, and Brian, and to the rest of the listeners too, happy new year. What's your take on this idea, Kartik, that Brian suggests?
Yeah, I think that it's an intriguing possibility, and I think it's something that CBS, now that they have the eight additional seasons, or that they, well, including this season, that they have UEFA Champions League rights, maybe it's something that they'll have the courage to try. I think it's a good idea. At least try it once or twice.
I'm not for this idea. I prefer the FIFA video game model, which is get the kids playing that game at a young age and then see what happens. And if they learn to, actually, in many ways, that's the way that they learn about the game. Like my son doesn't watch soccer. He played when he was really, really young, not really, really that interested in it. But ever since getting a PS5, he's been playing FIFA, and he's getting into it. So he's learning about soccer, how to play soccer, learning about the teams, learning about the goal celebrations, learning about Derek Ray as the commentator and Stuart Robson as the co-commentator. So to me, that's like the perfect introduction to soccer. The other interesting thing about this too is that my daughters had been playing FIFA over the holidays with him, and playing, you know, like 1v1 or 2v2 type of thing. And then came downstairs to watch, to sit around, to talk to me. And I was watching, I don't know, FA Cup or something like that. And they were like, "Wow, this looks a lot like FIFA." And I'm like, well, it's based on a real soccer game, right? Like soccer, FIFA's based on soccer. Soccer's not based on FIFA. But the similarities between the two, and even the camera angles, and the commentary, I mean, everything is so similar. It's so, to me, that's the entry point for Brian's son and others, is get them playing video games and get them to really immerse themselves, learning about the stadiums, the cultures, the teams, etc. And that's the conduit to get people into the sport, I think. Just a couple more comments here. Next up is Bill. Bill says, "I strongly disagree with Kartik's take that SportsCenter, but specifically ESPN FC, do not lean heavily into the leagues that they broadcast. After ESPN acquired La Liga, ESPN FC led with a Spanish match or Spanish league story almost every single day in that 21-22 season. I can hear Dan Thomas in my head opening the show saying things like, 'We'll talk about that cracking game between Liverpool and Manchester City, but first we go to La Liga, where Valencia took on Elche.'" I don't blame it. that sounds too real to be true. I can hear that in my voice, in my head too. I don't blame ESPN for trying to promote a league they spent or overspent a lot of money on, but let us not pretend that they lead with the stories that their audience want. And this must have been, Kartik, based on something you mentioned probably a couple of podcasts ago. I can't remember what it was specifically. Maybe you will.
Yeah, I think you're right to a large extent, Bill. I should have separated SportsCenter from ESPN FC. I do think you're right. In some cases, SportsCenter leans heavily into things that they have the rights for. But you even saw with kind of coverage of the Stanley Cup playoffs or major golf tournaments that ESPN has no part of. ESPN's almost completely out of the golf business. Although I guess now ESPN Plus is back into the PGA Tour early rounds, so they're not totally out. But for a few years, they were almost completely out of golf. You had a situation where they would still talk about those tournaments or those events. But yeah, you're right. ESPN FC did it with La Liga more than with the Bundesliga. I mean, they tried it with the Bundesliga initially, and then it felt like they pushed the Bundesliga back to being second, third segment material after maybe the audience spoke and said, look, we're really not that interested. We want to hear about the Premier League first and foremost.
And last but not least, Leo, with some really good questions here and some thoughts. Leo says, thanks for the information about the National League television rights. In the last couple of days, I've watched a few National League games. The broadcast quality is not bad, especially if you remember that this is the fifth tier in England. However, the idea of using a commentary from BBC Radio seems debatable. The difference between TV and radio commentary is huge. Lastly, I would like to add something to your discussion of the MLS season pass. Perhaps by gathering almost all of the league's broadcasts in one place, MLS will try to fit the fans, so to speak, into a bubble. Is it possible that the league will tell commentators what to say and what not to say? As far as I know, Kartik worked for NAS, the North American Soccer League, NASL. Did the league give commentators similar instructions? I apologize if my question is not entirely correct, but such interaction between the league and journalists, which in this case essentially work for Major League Soccer, seems to me possible or even inevitable.
Yeah, absolutely correct, Leo. In fact, we didn't do it as much with NASL, although we sometimes would lean on broadcasters to say certain things because we had a different model. I would have a conference call would be in or CBS or whoever was broadcasting, Gold TV at one point, whoever was broadcasting our games a couple of days before, and I would push kind of some storylines on them. Now, I think the relationship is much more direct with MLS and USL in terms of them scripting things. It was, again, we had kind of a club independence model. Now, in terms of the clubs in NASL, the clubs in NASL directly, and I broadcast some of those games myself, so I know how it went. The clubs directly would tell you kind of what to say and what you couldn't say, and it creates a little bit of tension. I mean, it's difficult to be fully objective about things. And look, I look at the way the Premier League is broadcast on NBC, where I think it's a lot of propaganda, and then at many times, and I contrast that. I hate to bring this up because I guess people think I'm in the pocket of ESPN FC. But the other day, there was an FA Cup match or a set of matches that weren't very good, quite frankly. And Dan Thomas on the post game shows like is saying, "Yeah, this is really rubbish. It wasn't very compelling." I'm paraphrasing, and then I think he stopped himself before he threw it to Alexis Nunez and Mark Ogden, who were at the ground saying, oh, wait a second, you know, we're the rights holder, we're the broadcaster, maybe I shouldn't be saying that. But sometimes you try and be honest and you realize maybe it's not the most it's not something that your bosses will look favorably upon, although in that case I think Thomas was just kind of having a go because he knew, right, he was being honest and they want him to be honest at ESPN. But then he kind of said, oh yeah, that's right, we're the rights holder, I shouldn't be saying this, after a little bit. But I think in a lot of cases, there is scripting going on, and at NASL, we didn't do it as much, but the other leagues did, and I wouldn't say we didn't do it at all. We did it some.
Yeah, there's a couple of things on this one. The first thing is that definitely at times on NBC's coverage of the Premier League, sometimes it's almost as if the FA Cup, League Cup and Champions League kind of exist on different planets. And there's really not a lot of discussion about those other competitions. I mean, they are relevant, right, in terms of league form versus playing in cup competitions and how much, you mean, that can hurt a club in terms of, or help a club in terms of more playing time and more games, more experience, but can also hurt them in terms of, you know, tough schedules, injuries, etc. But I don't think that's really blatant, but I think that is something that sometimes from time to time I'm like, it's strange that they're not mentioning any of these cup games that happened on other broadcasters. But with MLS, I know from personal experience in terms of speaking to some of the commentators that have worked on USL broadcasts in the past before, is that they were told, like, hey, and vice versa too, like, hey, don't mention this league, don't mention these teams, and vice versa, MLS commentators, don't mention the words USL, don't mention this other team. And when you have a system in the United States where these teams do play each other from time to time, usually either friendlies or US Open Cup, it's a weird relationship where they're not talking about each other. It reminds me, too, of Sky Sports used to do this a lot in the past. Sky Sports News, when we had it as a kind of a channel on Fox Sports or Fox Soccer Channel, or NBC had it for a while, is that on the back pages, often they'd kind of do the back pages of the British newspapers on Sky Sports and say, hey, tomorrow's headlines, here we go. It's Harry Kane, Wayne Rooney, whatever it would be. And you could see the newspapers, they'd be holding them up, and they would have cut out. On the back page, there were ads for Setanta Sports, and they cut out the ads. So you could see that the ad was taken out. They did not want to even show the name Setanta Sports or mention Setanta Sports or have any risk of somebody looking at the screen going like, ooh, look, there's an ad for Setanta Sports. There's definitely censorship. I mean, I think this happens throughout business in terms of like, hey, don't mention the competition. You know what I mean? People want to know about it. But we as consumers are smarter than that. I mean, I think we know what's going on. But sometimes it's the things that people don't say which are the most revealing. And I got that from MLS's press conference this week, where they talked about MLS Season Pass and talked about their excitement about announcing all of these different commentators and match analysts, co-commentators, etc. Is there's a lot of stuff that they didn't talk about. They didn't talk about the new playoff structure that they're suggesting and they're going to put forth, which is going to completely change kind of the MLS season, so to speak. There's a lot of things that they don't talk about, but which will come out, I'm sure, in the future. But yeah, no, great question, Leo, and thanks for letting us share our thoughts on that. All right, listeners, if you do want to share your thoughts on anything that we've talked about in this podcast, or as well as anything else in terms of the TV streaming space, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to read out those comments on air. You can always give us a call, leave a voicemail, 561-247-4625. Or you can send us an email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can go to the website, worldsoccertalk.com. And click on podcast and then just enter your comments in the latest episode. Or you can go to Twitter and reach out to us @WorldSoccerTalk, or go to facebook.com/WorldSoccerTalk and post your message there to us. Lots of different options. And Kartik, so you mentioned it a couple of times, but tell us more about the Substack and what it is, what it's called, and how people can find it.
Yeah, thanks for that, Chris. It's called Beyond the 90. It's on Substack, beyondthe90substack.com. It's a newsletter basically daily with myself and some other writers just talking about compelling issues in the sport of football. So, and maybe controversial takes, like yesterday I wrote a piece about Veghorst and how I think it's a good signing for Manchester United. And I think Erik ten Hag saw Veghorst at Wolfsburg, saw what he could do in terms of being a dynamic technical player and a good high presser without the ball, not just necessarily a big target lumbering forward as he's been characterized. So things like that. We have Dave Trotter covering French football football, Javi Martinez covering Spanish football, and then some of my controversial takes, Chris, on the domestic game and the USSF, MLS, USL, NWSL, etc. So it's Beyond the 90, Substack.com. You can subscribe. It's much of it's behind the paywall, so you can subscribe for the free newsletter or the paid newsletter. You obviously get more with the paid, but there is stuff you get with the free newsletter, including this is my own ideological zeal stuff on Florida soccer and lower division Florida soccer, which you will get just for signing up for the newsletter for free.
Yep, and Kartik will definitely continue on this podcast, and from time to time we'll be continuing writing for World Soccer Talk with some of those kind of highly analytical pieces about the TV streaming space. But in regards to kind of world soccer and kind of just your opinion-based information about whether it's the French League, Spanish League, Premier League, etc., or US leagues, definitely check out that Substack. All right, Kartik, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time and thoughts and analysis. And listeners, happy new year to you, and thank you for listening to the pod. We'll be back next week. But before we go, what are you going to do, Kartik, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.
You. Yeah, you. It's time to Muller lighten up those dark, gloomy nights and grab winter by the spoon. Say goodbye, glum, and hello, yum. With delicious strawberry, rhubarb, and even flipping cinnamon bun flavour. Mm. Muller Light. Find your flavour today.
This is a message from Acast.
If you love sports podcasts, then you'll love Pod Live. We've gathered together some of the best creators from around the world, from Fighting Talk and the Race F1 podcast to the socially distant sports bar and morning combat for a 5-day audio extravaganza. Tickets are on sale now at pod-live.com, with all shows happening at King's Place in London from the 8th to the 12th of February.